Welcome. You're listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast, the show that cuts through the fog of war and updates you about the ongoing conflict in Ukraine, with your host, Linnea Hubbard. Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts.
I'm Linnea Hubbard, and today is Wednesday, November 16th, 2022, and the end of week 38 of the Russia-Ukraine war. It's been 3,185 days since Russia occupied Crimea on February 27, 2014, and 266 days since the large-scale invasion of Ukraine began. Today's podcast looks at what happened yesterday in the Russia-Ukraine war. The Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine war update is compiled by our team from around the world. Today's report includes information from direct contacts in Ukraine and their proxies, Russian Ministry of Defense reports, the General Staff of the Armed Forces of Ukraine reports, Operational Command South of Ukraine, Open Source Intelligence, our in-house team of analysts and geolocation experts, and pro-Ukrainian and pro-Russian mill bloggers and social media accounts with a track record of trying to be accurate. We have one mission, to report the truth, because the truth matters. Let's start with our assessment of the current status of the war. First, our assessment that there would be a massive retaliatory attack on civilians and civilian infrastructure this week due to the Russian loss of Kherson was accurate. We maintain that additional attacks are highly likely. Second, we maintain our assessment that significant war crimes and atrocities will be discovered in Kherson during the coming week. Third, we maintain that the slowdown in combat operations on multiple axes is a mirage, with intense fighting creating little progress. Both belligerents have significant military assets they can reallocate to new axes. Fourth, we maintain that neither belligerent will institute a winter pause. Fifth, we maintain that President Putin's inner circle is actively targeting Russian Minister of Defense Sergei Shoigu for dismissal and replacement due to continued military failures in Ukraine. Sixth, we maintain that Russian President Vladimir Putin is facing renewed unrest inside and outside the Kremlin. If there continue to be military failures, there is a remote chance Russia could face a regime change. Seventh, our assessment that the Russian Navy's presence in the Black Sea is irrelevant was partially incorrect, with up to 20 caliber cruise missiles fired from the Black Sea yesterday. Missile-carrying vessels remain very close to Sevastopol. Eighth, we maintain that the Russian military within Ukraine is combat ineffective and can only mount effective defensive operations. Ninth, we maintain it is likely that the Russian Ministry of Defense will concentrate its available firepower on a small area, but will likely return to a combat-destroyed state after making marginal gains that they won't be able to leverage into a strategic victory. Further, we assess that this will likely occur on the Donetsk axis. Tenth, we maintain that the private military company Wagner Group is spread too thin due to its expanding role in the Donetsk Oblast and the revelation of crippling battlefield losses. 11th, we maintain that Ukraine holds the battlefield initiative, forcing Russian troops to remain in a defensive posture. And finally, we maintain that Russian forces in Belarus remain a credible threat for an invasion of Western Ukraine, but we now assess the possibility has pushed further out to the next 55 to 85 days. Let's get some regional updates, starting with Kherson and Zaporizhia. The claims that Ukrainian forces had liberated Holopristan, Olishki, and or Novokakhovka on the east bank of the Dnipro River and parts of the Kinburn Spit were inaccurate and have been abandoned by social media users. Because the truth matters. Operational Command South, or OCS, reported that more than 50 fire missions were carried out, mostly on Russian positions on the east bank of the Dnipro River. Russian ammunition depots in Novokakhovka and Olishki were destroyed. The General Staff of the Armed Forces of Ukraine, or GSAFU, reported that Russian troops have continued to withdraw from parts of Kherson, with the garrisons in Skadovsk and Hanichesk being drawn down and sent to Russian-occupied Crimea. The strike on School 24 in Russian-occupied Melitopol, which was being used as a barracks by Russian troops, left a number of soldiers wounded, at the very least. The situation at the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant remains unchanged, and there were no reports that the 750-kilovolt line was knocked out of service during yesterday's attack on energy infrastructure. Once again, scattered artillery fire from the Zaporizhia-Donetsk administrative border to Huliapola, to Orekhiv, to Mali Shcherbaky. Now to the Donbas region, starting with southwest Donetsk. Fighting continued on the outskirts of Vremivka, according to the GSAFU, with no change in the situation. Russian sources did not report any combat operations in the area. Most of Pavlivka remains unoccupied by either belligerent after the Ukrainian withdrawal on November 13th, due to continued heavy shelling and rockets fired by multiple launch rocket systems, or MLRS, by Ukraine. Russian mill bloggers reported that Ukraine has an artillery advantage, making an advance impossible. The GSAFU reported that the 1st Army Corps of the Donetsk People's Republic, or DNR, continued to throw troops at the eastern outskirts of Novomikhailivka without any change in the situation. Russian mill bloggers reported continued fighting in Opitne after the DNR claimed they had captured the town and provided an almost 4-minute video as proof. See, this is why we have trust issues. Positional fighting for control of Perevomaiske continued without any significant progress. The 1st Army Corps of the DNR has advanced to within 1,600 meters of Nevelske after 4 months of trying. For our U.S.-American audience, that's about a mile. The DNR claimed it captured Vodyana, which appears to have been untrue. Both Russian and Ukrainian sources reported fighting, which was described as intense at times, in the southern region of the village. Russian proxy forces also attempted a direct assault on Avdiivka, which caused significant losses for the DNR. Russian forces attempted to advance on Novokalinove for the 2nd day in a row, trying to flank the Ukrainian stronghold of Krasnohorivka. For the 2nd day in a row, there was no change in the situation. Russian mill bloggers claim that some of the Ukrainian troops formerly in Kherson are being deployed west of Donetsk. We can't confirm the veracity of the report, but it would be a logical decision by the GSAFU. We have elected to stop sharing the daily DNR People's Militia Public Relations Channel report because of their continued unsupported claims of massive Ukrainian equipment losses. For the 3rd day in a row, DNR officials reported they destroyed more Ukrainian equipment in Donetsk than the Russian Ministry of Defense reported was destroyed theater-wide. Look, it's understandable that the political leaders of the DNR are desperate for a meaningful win after 2.5 months of repeated major defeats. We had started sharing the reports because there was some value in the information, and some claims could be verified. Today's report added another 24 vehicles and weapon systems to the 3-day tally, which would be 80 pieces of military hardware destroyed. That is equivalent to the losses suffered by the Russian military at the failed Bilohorivka, in Luhansk, river crossing during a similar period in early May. And in that case, there were pictures, videos, first-hand accounts by Russian survivors and Ukrainian troops, and drone footage. In 3 days, however, the DNR has shared nothing to support their claim of destroying a whole-ass brigade. "We will happily eat crow," does not contain real crow, if videos and pictures are released, or return to sharing their reports when they get just a little bit closer to reality. Or a lot. A lot closer to reality. In northeast Donetsk, fighting for control of Bilohorivka, the one in Donetsk, led by Private Military Company or PMC Wagner Group, continued, according to both Ukrainian and Russian sources. The area remains a no-man's land, with Bilohorivka being strategically important as it's the highest point on the T-1302 highway, which neither belligerent can use as a ground line of communication, called a G-lock, that's a supply line. The trench warfare southeast of Soledar and east of Bakhmut has become so ordinary after 4 months of fighting that there were no reports from Ukrainian or Russian sources on the situation. Anecdotal reports say the situation remains, quote, difficult for both belligerents, with no change in the situation. We maintain that the private military company, or PMC Wagner Group, has been spread too thin along a 60-kilometer front and is facing serious challenges in maintaining troop strength due to losses approaching 3,000 mercenaries killed and wounded in action in a month. Ukrainian forces repelled attacks on Kurdyumivka and the hamlet of Vesele, south of Bakhmut. In Luhansk, Russian sources reported Ukraine attempted to advance on Kuzimivka and had partial success. Russian sources also reported that the Luhansk People's Republic, or LNR, 2nd Army Corps, and PMC Wagner attempted to advance on Bilohorivka, the one in Luhansk, without any success. Needless to say, we are not surprised that the LNR Territorial Guard Telegram channel has fabricated the capture of Bilohorivka for the third time in the last 30 days.
You're listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast. Our team of journalists, researchers, and analysts is funded by readers, listeners, and viewers just like you. To support independent journalism, please consider becoming a patron. You can find us on patreon.com at Malcontent News.
Let's talk about developments theater-wide and outside Ukraine. Russia launched its largest missile attack on Ukraine since the start of the war, using an estimated 100 cruise missiles and 20 Iranian-sourced Shahed 136 kamikaze drones. Cruise missiles were launched by Tu-95 and Tu-160 strategic bombers flying over the Caspian Sea and western Russia, as well as up to four ships of the Black Sea Fleet. KH-101 and KH-55 air-to-surface cruise missiles and Caliber cruise missiles were used in the morning attack, which struck central and northern Ukraine. The GSAFU reported that 73 cruise missiles and all Shahed 136 kamikaze drones were shot down, while 15 areas of critical civilian infrastructure were hit. That includes power plants, transformer farms, and thermal plants that provide heat and hot water. The attacks also damaged previously unscathed parts of the power grid in Ukraine, knocking out power to an estimated 10 million people. That's over 25% of the remaining population. Kyiv, Lviv, Ternopil, and Kharkiv oblasts were the hardest hit, with a significant number of residents remaining in the dark at the time of recording, and Lviv without heat and hot water. Ukraine announced there would be rolling blackouts nationwide and spontaneous shutdowns as needed. Residents of Kyiv were told that the power could be out for a long time and they should prepare accordingly. The missile strikes knocked out power in large parts of Moldova, including Russian-occupied Transnistria. Moldovan President Maia Sandu condemned the attacks and thanked the nation for its patience with the continued power shortages. Power outages also impacted natural gas delivery to Hungary, which to date has taken a more neutral stance toward Russian aggression. Air defenses shot down four Russian missiles over Kyiv, with two more striking residential buildings, killing one person. It was unclear if the buildings were hit by missiles themselves or by debris from destroyed missiles, which is more likely given the available images and videos showing the damage. Two explosions were reported in the Polish town of Shvodov, 9 kilometers from the Ukrainian border. At least one missile struck a farm where workers were drying grain, killing two. The blast sparked international outrage, with the Polish government calling an emergency meeting to discuss national security and scrambling its air force. Later in the day, Poland invoked Article 4 of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, a formal request to have an emergency meeting to discuss a NATO security matter and plan a response. Just before recording, Polish officials withdrew the request based on new evidence indicating the source of the missiles. United States President Joe Biden held an emergency meeting of the G7 leaders, who condemned the blasts and pledged their support to Ukraine. An emergency meeting of the G20 leaders was being held at the time of recording, and a joint statement by some members is expected. The Rammstein Working Group, established in April to discuss the coordination of military aid to Ukraine, will be holding its 8th meeting on November 16th. That's today. After examining the debris, Polish officials reported that the missile or missiles were, quote, made in Russia, but were not prepared to state if Russia fired the ordnance. Both Ukraine and Belarus also field Soviet-era and Russian Federation-made munitions. Overnight, United States officials said that the missile's origin was, quote, probably from Ukraine, and it was an errant S-300 air defense missile fired at Russian cruise missiles in the area. The Russian Ministry of Defense denied they fired any missiles or drones near the border of Poland on November 15th, which honestly would be laughable if not due to the circumstances and the targets that were struck today, including areas near the Polish border. It remained unclear if the S-300 missile or missiles intercepted a Russian cruise missile and debris landed on the agricultural area, or if an S-300 anti-aircraft missile had a technical malfunction. Despite Russian state media and Kremlin claims that Poland would use the missile strike to evoke Article 5 of the NATO Treaty and start World War III, calmer heads have prevailed in Bali at the G20 summit and in Brussels, where NATO headquarters is located. Given all the NATO reconnaissance and spying assets along the borders of Ukraine, it is highly likely that the origin and path of the targeted cruise missile or missiles, if they were intercepted, where, and the path of the S-300 air defense missiles were captured and are being analyzed. There is no need to build a backyard bunker at this time. Some assessment here. We have repeated in our situation reports that when Russian missiles have targeted facilities close to the Polish border and cities such as Lviv, that the environment is ripe for an error and cross-border incident. We are less surprised that this happened, and more surprised that it took almost 9 months. Ukrainian officials again appealed for fourth-generation fighter airplanes from Western sources and more advanced air defense systems. Pundits claimed that the blasts, which appear to have been an accident, wouldn't have happened with more modern and effective air defense systems. The missile strikes were condemned by the PMC Wagner social media channel Gray Zone. The authors questioned the wisdom of the Russian Ministry of Defense and the continued terrorizing of Ukrainian citizens, saying, quote, I cannot explain the agony. Why leave cities without the possibility of maintaining life where, according to you, they mean the Kremlin, Russians live and wait for Russia? No, it's some bullshit. Let's make it so that even the pro-Russians in Kyiv are twisted. Destroy other transport infrastructure used for military purposes. Reveal the intelligence of the supply of foreign technology. Strike at the standing military formations of the enemy at the front. Nope. Every night, explosions in Mykolaiv. Boom, bak, bam. 4 months later, oh, Ukrainians broke the bridge to Kherson and Kakhovka. Oh, Ukrainians came so close that it's time for us to retreat and blow up bridges behind us. End quote. Gray Zone rightly pointed out that the missile strikes are not endearing Russian mir upon the Ukrainian population and are a waste of military resources. The Mill bloggers predicted that Russia would lose more territory in the coming months, followed by more pointless attacks on civilians and civilian infrastructure as punishment. Some assessment here. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. In economic news, the ruble was unchanged, with an exchange rate of 60 for one U.S. dollar. Oil prices stopped their slide and rose slightly, with WTI crude inching up to $87 a barrel and Brent trading at $94. United States wholesale RBOB gasoline on the spot market was stable at $2.53 per gallon for November contracts. That's 67 cents a liter. Dutch TTF gas futures for December 2022 remained highly volatile, dropping sharply to 119 euros per megawatt hour. January 2023 contracts were also down, trading at 127 euros. Chicago SRW wheat futures fell to $8.12 a bushel for March 2022 contracts after a report indicated Ukraine would request to expand grain shipments to include the port of Mykolaiv. And that's what we know. Join me again tomorrow for more updates. Until then, stay safe, everyone.
You've been listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast. To help keep us independent, please consider providing financial support by becoming a patron. Want on-demand news in your hand? Download the Google News app and make Malcontent News one of your favorites to receive breaking news updates. Thank you for listening.